From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made November of 2000, Election Day. The race between Al Gore and George W. Bush came down to the state of Florida. Early in the evening, one network called Florida for Al Gore. Then they called that result back. Another network called the state for George W. Bush. Then they called that one back as well. The vote count was essentially in chaos. It was very close. And by, well, about midnight, everyone knew it was going to come down to a tiny margin. And voters were starting to come forward with complaints about how the ballots had been constructed. The final margin of Florida would turn out to be 537 votes, officially. But we'll never know the true figure of how many voters intended to cast votes for Bush, Gore, and others. That's because Florida used the now infamous butterfly ballot design. It caused confusion across the state. And then in the days that followed, while the court had the case, voters would practically yell at television reporters that they hadn't even been sure who they were voting for. The design was dizzying. So how to make sure that Florida 2000 doesn't happen again, and how to make sure our democracy is much better designed from ballots to registration forms to everything else associated with access? Well, leave it to people like Marsha Lawson. She's the director of the University of Illinois Chicago School of Design. And in 2000, she played a leading role in Design for Democracy, which is a national election reform initiative. So have we fixed the problems of Florida 2000? How can we still improve ballots and registration and access? Marsha Lawson is in Rochester today. She's a guest coming to RIT, where she's going to be offering a presentation this afternoon at 4:45. Open to the public. You can check it out. It's called Designing Change at the University Gallery at RIT. But first, she's kind enough to be my guest on Connections. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
You're feeling very confident that Florida 2000 could never happen again? I asked her before the program began, and I was hoping for a much more optimistic answer. But the truth is, how do you feel about it?
Well, the very same thing won't happen again.
the exact same thing won't happen. But are you satisfied with ballot design and those issues right now?
Ballot design's a complex process, and I'm confident that there are tools available for those who are producers of elections throughout the country to do a better job of designing their ballots.
Well, I want to talk about how you kind of got involved here, but let me back up and first just ask, as a graphic designer, your work and your career has focused on a wide range of things. I mean, we're going to be talking about democratic initiatives, ballot access, or ballot design, those kind of things. But you focused on a wide range of things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Okay. And so I wonder what you were doing as an observer of the 2000 election, not getting political, mm-hmm. but just I wonder if when all of that was unfolding as a designer, you were seeing it happen and saying, how in the world could a ballot look like that?
Well, I know how a ballot can look like that because there are a lot of things in the world that are designed by people who don't have the expertise to design. They don't even really know that's the process that they're using to create information on a page. But I was actually at a design conference that was taking place in Chicago when this was happening. And, you know, this is what we do. This arranging information on a page so that choices are clear is very much a part of design. It's a information design is what we call it, sort of a subset of graphic design. And, you know, the whole place was like, wait, we know how to do this. This is what we do. So we knew that it was a time for our profession to step up and say, hey, we should be involved in this process. So I did what I could do to that. And I happened to be someone in a position to do that. I'm a university professor. I was on the board of our local chapter of the American Institute of Graphic Arts, AIGA. And I could step forward and say, hey, I can put some energy toward this.
Do you remember looking at the butterfly ballots themselves? I mean, what did you think of the actual design of those ballots?
Oh, they're terrible. And we had even worse in Chicago. So we also used the punch card system and what has now become known as the infamous butterfly ballot. So we were very familiar with how confusing ballots are, those of us who vote in Chicago.
Punch card, is that the hanging chad? Is that what you refer to there?
Yes.
All right. So just as a designer looking at a butterfly ballot, it seems sort of obvious to us, but when you see a ballot that looks like that, what goes through your mind?
I think yikes at first because it's what's going on is that you're voting in a list for a list of people on a page. Actually, it's two pages, one on the left, one on the right. You're doing the act of casting your ballot down the center between those two pages, and information is coming at you from the left and from the right. So we read from left to right, not right to left in this country, and yet we're using both of those actions to cast a ballot. Where does the list start? Do you read left to right in terms of thinking about the center of the page, or do you read all the way down the left and go to the top of the right? It's a very confusing setup. It's set up that way because the punch card is one sheet of paper that has to hold a lot of information that has to be addressed from two sides of a page. It's very visual. So I'm describing these things that I feel like I'm designing in the air. But, you know, it's a mess. So we look at it and say, wow, this needs to be fixed.
Yeah, and to be clear on, you know, your career here, I've seen in several places you've been interviewed and you talk about what your vision for the purpose of design is. And you often say things like progress or moving forward, mm-hmm. which is an interesting way to describe it, because some graphic designers, I went to college with a number of graphic designers, and not to disparage their work, but they would probably talk about the thrill of design, aesthetics, etc. You talk a lot about progress and moving forward. Why?
Mm-hmm. Design is about progress to me. It's about moving forward. It's about making better futures. It's about understanding that things in the world can be made better through design process. And I have the skills to help people envision futures and to realize them. And it's very meaningful for me to get involved in projects larger than myself and to involve my students in that work. So for me, this is one of those places where, you know, I saw an opportunity.
Do you have to go through the world just always seeing things that are designed or laid out and you think, how in the world could they do this way? Or do you occasionally, can you point to things and you say, that is brilliant. That is fabulous design. What's an example of something you think is just fabulously designed?
Oh, there are many things. I'm going to draw a blank, but you know, you can go to a nicely designed space where you can find what you need. Maybe there's a new airport where the signs are all really clear and you know exactly where to go. That experience of navigating space or navigating information or becoming loyal to a brand, you know, when it feels right to you, it's an enjoyable experience, that's a well-designed experience.
Yeah, and I think probably with ballots, and we'll get into more of that in a second here, that was probably, had to have been designed by people who just didn't really get it or weren't maliciously designing to be confusing. And then there are those who design, like the Italians, their road signs are meant to confuse foreigners. If you've ever been to Italy, That's the whole purpose of Italian road signs, to try to get you feeling lost and confused. But in our ballots, I'm sure it wasn't that way. So take me through the process then. You got involved. Did someone call you, first of all, or did you call someone saying, look, that, you know, Florida was a mess, it's probably not an outlier, let's work on this? How did that happen?
I was on the board of my local chapter of AIGA, and we as a group said, hey, let's do something. There had been an op art piece by Paula Scherer of Pentagram in New York, doing an analysis of what was wrong with the ballot that ran as an op art piece the day after the election. And we were like, well, that's great, you know, pointing out what's wrong, but why don't we do something where we can show what's right? So we as a group set about redesigning our local butterfly ballot, made a new design of that to show how design alone, not changing technology, because we didn't feel like we had the right to go into our election officials and say, enough of these punch cards, you know, that was not what we know about. We went in and we said, here's the butterfly ballot before, here's how it can be redesigned to improve the experience, to make your choices clearer. And it was our Cook County clerk, David Orr, who said, oh, this is cool. I'll work with you.
Illinois?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So Chicago is in Cook County, Illinois. Yep. This happened to be the suburban, the office responsible for the suburban Chicago jurisdictions. But there's a lot there, too. So it was a very large and complex jurisdiction. And it was working with the Cook County clerk's office that we really learned about what it takes to make these differences. So it was just sort of offering our services in a way that is not very complex at first. It's not that hard to design a better ballot, but it's very hard to design a better ballot within the complex systems of election production.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there are lots of processes that every election, every organization responsible for election must follow. There's election code. So, for example, the election code of Illinois looks like a phone book and describes things like the size of type in inches, which we don't even use to measure type. So capital letters at least a quarter of an inch tall. You know, this is not how you design graphics. It's how lawyers describe what they see and put it down as law, as election codes.
Is that how that happened, by the way?
I believe that's how that happened. It's speculation on my part, but it's legalese. I mean, the election code is not written to teach people how to design ballots. And the design of a ballot is but, you know, one chapter of this election code. So there are processes for how candidates register, for how it's part of the whole large process.
Okay, when it comes to who is responsible for what ballots and sort of what levels, how much did you know going into that process, Marcia?
Oh, nothing.
Yeah.
No, I mean it's we were naive. We learned a lot very quickly. What we needed and we had was a someone else interested in progress, our Cook County clerk and his staff. And when you have someone cooperating in an area that needs to change, then you have all the chance in the world of making a difference.
And let's be clear and let's state the problem, because some listeners may be saying, still probably small numbers, or how many would be that confused? You know, Slate and others have covered problems with ballot design, not just in Florida, even in places like Ohio in 2008, where close elections have happened. You don't need that many voters who really feel genuinely confused for you to really injure the process. Do you feel that way?
I don't after Florida of 2000, no.
Yeah. And so, all right, so Cook County tells you, they're sort of on board with this, but then what happens next? What's the process for you after that?
So what was great about our situation is that AIGA, the Professional Association for Design, based in New York City, we were a large chapter, large, very active chapter of AIGA. AIGA had already, Rick Raffay and others, he was our executive director at the time, had been working to get language into legislation of other government topics he'd been working from the top down, and we had a grassroots effort on the same topic. So we were able to scale it up very quickly and efficiently.
And, so let me just jump right to a listener question. This came in via email. Hold on, let me just pull this back up. I always do this because this is a good time to kind of just explain what has happened to my phone. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Mark, I'm going to summarize because I saw the question, but I can't get back to it. Mark just essentially wanted to know, why not one ballot, one size fits all, every state, same one, every voter, no matter where you are, it's going to be the same design, same ballot. What's the problem with that?
What
did you find out?
I would say that's what we hoped too when we started all this. Democracy is messy, and we are, led by the state. So elections are produced at the local level. So even your federal, when you're voting in a federal election, you're voting on a ballot that also contains local representatives, local elections. Those elections are each produced often at the county level. It can even go smaller than the county level. There are over 3,000 counties in the U.S. Every one of these counties has their own set of rules they follow, state level, federal level. What we were able to do is make an impact on federal elections, produce guidelines for how ballots should look for federal elections, and those can then be interpreted at the state level. But we don't dictate to states what they can and cannot do in our country.
Okay. But ideally, what would you like to see states and local governments do with it then?
Well,
keep the same template?
Of course. But there's also a large number of voting systems, voting technologies. Now while punch cards are gone, there are electronic voting systems and optical scan voting systems. There are suppliers of those systems that all have their own proprietary information and all have their own way of doing things. So the universal thing is not easy at all. And it would not be done in a place where we don't make rules that everybody has to follow as a dictate. I mean, we are a democracy.
Sure, and yeah. I'm a fan of federalism. I'm a fan of states having some of their own say here. But you would think that after Florida 2000, this was a chance to say, all right, we're not only getting rid of the punch cards and butterfly ballots, but we are going to try to at least streamline this to some degree. And now you do have this sort of amalgam. What's the worst that's out there right now that you've seen?
I don't see ballots where I don't vote, so I can't say. But they do come in to me. I do see things come in. I can't say I know where there's a worst case at all. But what we did do is we did create guidelines so that people can find them and follow them. And there are people now who produce elections who are now very aware of this work, who do try to advocate within their own circles. People who produce elections get together and share information, best practices, and we knew that if we could start to make positive change, that people would be copying positive change, better examples, and the emulating the better examples would spread. So we have made some significant progress in that area.
The recommendations you have, again, for the federal level, mm-hmm. have been adopted how widely?
I have no idea. I have colleagues who would know more, but we've definitely, states like Washington, Nebraska, Oregon was our leading state, Illinois, these are states I know there's a lot of activity.
Okay. Listeners, I should mention as well, this is a good chance if you've ever been frustrated by design when it comes to being in the ballot booth, how things are done, and we're going to get into registration and other related issues. If this has been sort of a bugaboo for you at all, you can call the program. And Marsha Lawson, I would love to hear her take on some of our complaints. Sometimes it's hard when you don't see a ballot directly in front of you, but she has experience in this area. And it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Marsha's the author of Design for Democracy, Ballot and Election Design. She's director of the University of Illinois Chicago School of Design and founder of the Chicago office of Studio Lab. And at 4:45 today, she's a guest out at RIT. She's going to be presenting at the University Gallery. So if you're hearing this conversation and you know, you've got election junkie friends or you've got design-loving friends, maybe students in your family, this is a good chance to hear from a leader in this industry. And I'm curious to know, Marsha, by the 2004 election, so the next presidential election, did you roll into that election thinking, boy, we've gone nowhere, this could happen again? Or I'm trying to think back to what 2004 was like. How quickly were things moving?
Well, things were moving. I don't think I went into it thinking this could never happen again. But what happened in 2002 is the Help America Vote Act, which gave millions of dollars to states to change their voting technology. I actually would say that was a bit of an overreaction. Punch card, one of the things I learned that I didn't know going into this was that punch card voting is actually not that bad. It's just how you have to be able to design the ballots to work with punch cards. But there's something about mechanical processes. We trust them more. You can see that hole in that card that we're not, you know, it wasn't so much, I think, in the end, the punch card system that was the problem. It was really the design of the page. But the Help America Vote Act, all states, you know, got busy and spent money and had access to these this information to improve their election processes. So we knew things were happening, but we didn't. You know, I mean, you can't expect something like Florida to ever happen again. So we don't have the expectation that this is going to happen again. We just knew that that was the time to get the information out there.
Okay. And to be clear, because I know some may be wondering, I don't know how deeply you dug into it. To this day, do you know who designed that actual Florida ballot?
We do. And okay. she became a well-known figure and a kind of a tragic one. I mean, she did, like you said, she meant no harm. These are people who mean well, and they take great pride in presenting the information in their ballots. And in my experience, very fairly. I mean, I saw really very little politics
in
this work. No malice whatsoever, but did not understand that this is a discipline. There are ways you present information that are right and wrong. You're just trying to, mostly election officials are in a hurry, and they're trying to fit information on a page. And they, you know, they don't know that there are designers who can do that for them.
And I suspect the person who designed the Florida ballot was not in the design discipline.
Not at all.
Okay.
No.
And relying, as you said, on at least some guidelines from lawyers about how big texts have to be, capital letters, lowercase letters, those kind of things, yes?
She would have been following her election code, and she would have been working with whoever, probably the printer, without a designer, who was putting the information on the page and giving feedback on how to get that information to fit on there.
Yeah. So in other words, she's doing a job that's not her expertise. And that it should have been people like you and your colleagues at least in the room helping with these processes from the beginning.
Yes.
Okay. Do you now have any idea how many ballots the next time Americans vote, well, November, but whenever it is for them, because not everybody's going to vote in November. Any idea, if you're just guessing, how many ballots, how many, you know, state to state, how often they're still designed by people with no design experience? Is it most?
Most.
It's most.
It would be very rare that a designer would actually design the ballot.
Oh, boy.
But the designers have impacted the systems, I hope, that are being used. And once you get systems and templates, you might be implementing. So I think there's going to be an increase in the quality of the design of the ballots.
Sure.
But you know, designers cost money, too. So that's another, you know, that's another step of the process that nobody's prepared for.
I like living in a house, though.
Yeah.
But I don't want to build it. I don't have the expertise to build it. I could try, and eventually it would probably fall down on me. And that's unfortunately what we saw in Florida. And that's unfortunately apparently what we're still doing in some ways. Claire in Pittsford, first up on the phone. Go ahead, Claire.
Yeah, hi. I was surprised to see hear this topic on the radio this morning because I had an awful experience with the primary election where my vote did not get cast. And perhaps I'm the stupid one, but I don't think that the ballot should have been designed to cast an empty ballot, which is what happened. So I walked in and I walked over and they said, what party? And I said very loudly, oh, Democrat. And I thought, okay, that means I'm voting Democrat. And I took the ballot, and I turned around. They were chatting to me. I was looking back over my phone. They were chatting. I walked up to the voting booth, where you cast your ballot, the machine. And the fellow standing there was on his cell phone, and I said, am I doing this right? And then I put my ballot in the machine, and I looked down, and I go, there's a green button that says cast. So I went, oh, okay, I'm supposed to push that button. I pushed that button, and then I went, whoa, wait a minute, I never voted. In other words, the machine took my ballot, but the people who were there never directed me to a voting booth to cast it. And somehow in my mind, I guess I thought because I said Democrat, that there was just one, that I was going to be casting Democrat, and that was all I had to do, and I put it in the machine. They never directed me over to the voting booth. Mm. So I'm stupid, I realize that, but I don't think the machine should have accepted a blank ballot. It should have spit it back out so that I would have had a chance to see what I had done wrong.
Claire, I don't think, thank you for the phone call. No one is saying you're stupid at all, and I think it's rare to find anybody who's voted their whole life as adults and never once had at least a moment of confusion or concern. So,
yeah.
Marcia, what's your response to Claire's experience from a design perspective? Can we ever get to a point where someone could say, hey, wait a second, that machine grabbed my ballot, but I didn't even cast the vote, or is that not fixable?
You touched upon so many topics that we became very engaged with. The first one is you're absolutely not stupid, and we all feel stupid when we're voting. And why, no matter who we are, no matter what we do in our profession and or lack of thereof, we're not stupid people. And this is something we do so rarely, and it's a process that we're very invested in, and we are being led through that process by a workforce, the poll workers, that are either volunteers or very undertrained, and are only doing this job during elections. So,
well, I'm grateful to them for being there.
Of course.
But there just should be no machine that would take a blank ballot. Why would it do that?
Well, and so that's part of the voting system problem. But a little more about the poll workers, because they are the champions of all of this. I mean, if you ask anybody, what was your voting experience like, and they have a complaint, it's generally about an interaction with a poll worker. And these are people who give up their time and are very dedicated citizens, and yet that's a big problem. So we worked very hard in creating new materials for poll workers. We didn't just work on ballots. What you're describing is the very first discovery that my colleagues and I made, and we began to work very hard behind the scenes to make things better for elections behind the scenes as well. We don't know how to solve all those problems, but I think more voters being aware of that, and that the people that they're interacting with are, probably as nervous about their day as they are, and that we can, try to be more vocal. You should have been able to, if that vote wasn't cast, there should have been a way for you to say.
They should have.
Yeah.
But they did actually, the people sitting at the Republican table actually called down to the Board of Elections and asked, is there anything we can do? It's already been cast. And they said no. So they did try to help. But
yeah.
I'm saying the machine is designed with a flaw, because there's going to be humans that are going to be making errors. So why exacerbate it by having the machine be able to make an error?
Yeah. So I would, I would make sure your local election officials know about your experience, because they, if they're elected by their voters, they want to correct things. So let them know they don't want that to happen again. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I tuned in kind of late. I just heard this topic. Who are you?
Sure. Claire, that's a good question. The host should tell you more often. Marcia Lawson is in Rochester today speaking at RIT at 4:45. She's going to be giving a presentation at RIT's University Gallery. It's free and open to the public, and you can check it out. And why don't you tell them a little bit for the audience just tuning in, Marcia, more on your credentials and your background.
I am the director of the School of Design at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and a founding principal of Studio Lab, a design firm in Chicago and San Francisco. And this has just become, I've become well known for this work, Design for Democracy, because I became engaged in trying to make things better after the 2000 election, when we had the very close election in Palm Beach County, Florida, where there was a confusing ballot.
Yeah, the butterfly ballot, Claire. So think of this, Claire. Everybody was frustrated with Florida. And I'm not saying, I'm not taking a side on the outcome of the result. I think everybody should be frustrated that a clear amount of voters did not feel like they understood the process, whether it was hanging chads, butterfly design, and everything else that was associated with it. It was a mess. And so what happened? Well, the design world called in the people with the superhero capes, and Marcia was one of them. And we all hoped that by 2004, everything would be fixed and there'd be a uniform standard. And what we're learning is it's a little more complex than that. But certainly, it's gotten a little bit better. It's just that you can't create a top-down standard where there's a federal ballot that the state ballots will look exactly the same with different names and local races. I don't know if anywhere in the country it's fully like that. That would be great if that were the case. And I wonder if you, did you have any pushback in this process? You know, you talked about Cook County, where they were really warm and welcoming to this idea of making it better. Did some come to you and say, look, we've been doing this for years. We know what we're doing.
Well, in Cook County, we had an enlightened individual and a few members of his staff that were interested in helping us make things better. But there was pushback at every minute. I mean, I quit working on this project 5 times in a not pleasant way.
Who was pushing back?
Well, let's see. The first pushback would have been, I think, the printers responsible for printing the ballots when we wanted to change the design of the ballots, because that would take work. We had developed systems for being able to print more efficiently. We had materials for poll workers, we had posters, and we said you can print all these templates in advance and imprint them on election day. And it took a long time for us to understand why this wasn't adapted, because it made so much sense. But it's because printers are voters and you spread out the work. So there were all these sort of things that just are not necessarily logical in our world of consulting to for-profit organizations that really came about in this work. You start to learn that things are very different. You also were often hurting the feelings of the person who laid out that ballot, that they took pride in that work. And so we've learned to be much more respectful about the lack of quality of design as well. So there's pushback. The vendors for the election systems were absolutely unwelcoming in the beginning. And then we find the one that really will work with us. There was an optical scan supplier that helped us a lot. And then we need to get to the person within that organization that's actually creating the software that does the ballot layout. And that can be very hard, too, because we're working at this higher level of trying to make cultural change. How do we get to the guy, you know, or the gal that is doing that work?
So you're saying all the reasons that change didn't come quickly after Florida 2000, mm-hmm. despite all of these efforts. Shauna in Rochester next up on the phone. Go ahead, Shauna.
Hi. I was just thinking, I'm a doctor, and there are big changes sometimes that come in medications. And what they do with us is they have a list of either all physicians, if that applies, or a particular specialty, and they just invite us to a national conference of 3 or 4 days, or if they're kinder, they will make regional ones so that you don't have to pay such an enormous airfare to get there. But, you know, it's a question of if you go, you'll be up on the latest, and you get a little certificate of attendance at the end. And if you don't, you won't. And certainly, not all of design by any manner of means, but certainly something like how to design a ballot, maybe you could draw up a list of do's and don'ts and illustrate this, not necessarily using a particular state or county or whatever, just make up one. You know, and this is the point about this is it's not a good idea to have names down 2 sides of the paper or something like that. And, those who want to be up on things will come to you, because at least with doctors, we don't want to be the last doctors we know to find out about the newest thing.
Thank you, Shauna. Marshall Austin, you want to respond to that? Go ahead.
Yes, what you're describing is exactly what we produced. So we produced very involved guidelines, which are available to election officials through the Election Assistance Commission, And we were close with John Lindback, who was president of the National Association of State Election Directors in this work. And they do have national conferences and regional conferences, and we did training sessions at these conferences. And one of the things we quickly discovered is we needed sort of the short list, and we have these 10 clear steps, the 10 ballot design guidelines that are readily available to those who seek them out either on the AIGA website or the EAC website, and they provide exactly what you describe. So we can't make it any kind of requirement, but it's certainly widespread. And the NASA, that's the organization that I described, did a wonderful job of getting us in front of audiences and helping election officials have access to our work.
We've touched a nerve because the phone keeps ringing. I've got a pile of email from people sharing their thoughts or stories about design on just the ballot side, and we haven't even had a chance to move on beyond ballot. So let's get our only short break of the hour. When we come back, we'll squeeze in as much of this as we can from you. And that's great. I mean, it's great to hear from people who have thoughts on the process. It means people are engaged and they care, and that's exactly what we're looking for. Marsha Lawson will answer as much of that as we can for you. We'll also talk about some of her other work and remind you where you can see her this afternoon. So let's get our only short break. We'll come back to your emails and phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, my guest is a man who describes himself as a black man in a profoundly white field. It's Drew Lanham. He's the author of a book called The Home Place, Memoirs of a Colored Man's Love Affair with Nature. He's an ecologist, a conservationist, and a birder. But he says for black kids, they rarely go into this field. Why is that? He's in Rochester to talk about how to change it. We'll discuss it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Marsha Lawson's book is Design for Democracy, Ballot and Election Design, and she was just describing the guidelines that are there for the people who are in charge of these matters across the country to use if they want. And I've been sort of pressing the point on how many people are using them. Again, you don't know exactly, but certainly I would hope by now in 2016, you've over time heard a little bit more each year, more people adopting, yes?
Yes, definitely. And there's a whole group of colleagues of mine, designers, who are active in this work now. So we're definitely getting it out there.
Yeah, and I'm curious to know if the feedback, you know, once you hear somebody signs on, they're using these guidelines, are they generally happy with what they're seeing in terms of process, the actual ballots, the response from voters?
Yeah, we actually do get good feedback on this. And I think once those in the field producing elections understand the guidelines and that following them will help, they become advocates too and really help each other. So yeah, we do have some examples actually of improved participation statistically, which we're not used to having statistical support for our work. So that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's great. Back to the phones, David in Aurora. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, thanks. I just want to make one comment and hope that sometime on the program you could have the person Paul Lepari, who spent 5 years of his life improving the election system in New York State. The reason we have what we have, and we were one of the early ones voting on paper with optical scan, is because of his 5 years of work. He's a software engineer who was unemployed at the time. My question is, what about having two ballots? One, a standard one for all 50 states, and then the other for local elections? And that's my question, and I'll take it off the air.
Thank you, David. Marsha?
That sounds good to me. I can't say I would know how to make that happen because it's hard enough. You have one ballot on election day. You mean you would cast two? It's a little confusing.
I think what he's essentially saying is two basic templates. You know, you've got the same ballot on the federal side, but he wouldn't have the federal because there's different congressional races and such.
Yeah.
There's very few that every state would have besides the presidency. Right?
Yeah, and then if you have to have two actual ballots, yeah, one for federal, one for local, it could get even more complicated. So
governments are going to resist.
Sounds
that,
good, though. Yeah.
So you're saying, in your experience, sounds good. You know, if we had sort of unlimited resources, that could be probably more streamlined. Probably some pushback on that from that.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
And let me get Amy's question, which sort of lines up with this. Amy just wrote to the program and said, "Evan, you asked the question, what's the worst of the ballots out there? Is there a single ideal ballot that we can look at?"
It's hard. It's interesting. It's hard to produce a single ideal ballot. We have produced in the book our examples of improved ballots and ideal ballots. But each voting system requires a different ballot design. So a touchscreen looks different, has a different set of criteria to design against than an optical scan ballot. But there are there are examples of what an ideal ballot looks like for those different voting systems in this work, in the book and on the AIJ website and on the EAC website.
Jack wants to know, how much does design look at potential manipulation?
We don't. So we never got involved in that simply because we wanted to stay out of, with my work and my colleagues, we were simply trying to say, hey, there's this thing called information design. There are experts in this. We can make this information clearer. We were not getting involved in the manipulation.
Okay,
issues.
So you are, as a graphic designer, as someone is, you want to present information as clearly as you can.
Correct.
And then if the system, if the people running that find out that whatever the system they're using is falsifiable, manipulatable, that's something that they would tackle at a separate stage.
Yes.
Okay. Misty writes to us and says, call me old-fashioned, but I actually miss the lever system. I never had issues with voting that way. Unique for us in New York, Marcia?
Yeah, I don't know of any other state that at the time I was involved in this that was using lever. There's not a lot of design problem there, information design problem, because you have very little surface area upon which to put information. Maybe that's part of why it works so well, is that the design decisions are so simple. I've never voted lever, but if it works, then I'm all for it. I was not a big advocate of changing technologies. I was just after votes being clear or information being clear.
Chris writes to us and says, as a Democrat living in the town of Greece, there have been several times I have cast a blank ballot during a general election. It's a way to protest. And I think he's sharing this in response to the story earlier of accidentally casting a blank ballot and having that be accepted. He's just making the point that it would be hard for a system to kind of allow you to have the ballot back, because some people actually do that for a reason, I guess. That makes sense to you?
Yes, and except that it would be good if someone like our earlier caller, had known they made a mistake and wanted to get that vote in, it would be nice that she could, and it would be equally good that the one who wants to leave it blank as protest can leave it blank.
You know? Sure, and you know, maybe once you leave the premises, can't come back and revote. But if you're still in there and you realize you've made a mistake, perhaps I don't know. Look, you can see how ignorant I am about this.
Well, and you can imagine that taking like 20 minutes,
and there's no 20
minutes on election day. So this is why these things are a challenge. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. Victor writes to the program and says, ballots are design-wise not so good. To avoid confusion at the election booth, just download a copy of your local district's ballot from the Board of Education's website a few days before, study it, mark it up, and take it to the booth. Takes a lot of the confusion out of it.
That's a fabulous idea.
Everybody endorses that, Victor. Education preparation's great. And I'm not making light of that. For sure, the more prepared and more engaged and the more studied you are, the more confident you'll feel. But, you know, I go back to what Claire said earlier on the phone, Marcia. This is an engaged citizen, and she felt silly on election day. Mm-hmm. She's not the only one. People shouldn't be made to feel dumb in a ballot booth, right? So let's talk a little bit about an action plan. I want to read what Slate Magazine Online wrote about this a couple of years ago, because they credited AIGA, which is what, by the way, again?
Well, we now go by the Professional Association of Design. Its historic name is American Institute of Graphic Arts.
Okay. Slate wrote the following in a piece in late 2013 on what happened in Florida 2000 with the butterfly ballot, but also have we fixed things. They wrote, quote, the shambolic state of ballot design in America remains a potent threat to our democracy. In the 2008 and 2010 elections, by one estimate, a combined total of more than 500,000 votes were not counted due to voter errors that implied, at least, poor ballot design. The Slate piece goes on to say, quote, the good news is that America has a lot of design experts, and since Florida 2000, they've been putting their talents to work. AIGA, the Professional Design Association, has its Design for Democracy project. The problem is that much of this best practice hasn't yet been put into practice. So what to do? Slate says the following, and I'll ask Marcia for her thoughts on this. Again, this is late 2013, so hopefully she's going to say, we made some more progress on this than I sort of doubt it. But Slate says, ask Congress to set basic design standards for federal elections loose enough to allow for regional variations. States wouldn't necessarily have to match ballots for non-federal contests to these standards, but they might. State level. Absent a federal stick, state governments need to either mandate good ballot design or get out of the business of shackling local authorities with ridiculous rules about capital letters, line centering, and ballot initiative phrasing. So write to your state legislators and ask them what they're doing to follow the Brennan Center's ballot design checklist. And then on a local level, they quoted Rick Greffe. Oh, Greffe. See, mm-hmm. Thank you. It's G-R-E-F-E. Thank you. AIGA's executive director at the time, noting that, however conscientious, local administrators often lack the expertise to focus on user experience, clarity, and simplicity. So Slate says, send your electoral officials the damn checklist. Ask them to change whatever they can within state law. Do it now. And remind them that AIGA will help them find personalized assistance on ballot design. They need it, and they can contact AIGA. So, how do you feel about those prescriptions?
I think that's exactly what I would say.
Still true today.
Yes. Yes, of course. I mean, this is, you know, 3,000 counties and changing information all the time. This is not an easy, even when and if everybody was following the templates, there would still be issues. My experience was with every time I would give a talk about this to election officials, they would say, but my county's different because we have this problem, and we would work to solve that problem. And those changes will continue to happen. It's not going to be done with a single template or set of guidelines. It's going to be an ongoing process of trying to make ballots clear.
On that local level, is it easier to do federal? I mean, usually it's sort of local is easier and federal is the challenge, but is it easier for
it's
you
easier
to do?
It's easier to do federal because we can set standards for others to follow, and that all exists, and the resources listed in the Slate article are the ones. And it's true that there are designers more than willing to do this to get involved. So there are I forget how many of us there are AIGA members now, 17 or 18,000 designers who can be called upon to help in your area. I like the book itself is an advocacy tool. You can take it to your officials. It was designed for that. We gave it to every member of Congress at the time, every state election director, so just to build awareness for the work out there.
All right, so closing the loop on the checklist then. For those who don't have the book, I'm going to dive into the book a little bit more in a second. But the checklist we can find it online?
AIGA.org.
AIGA.org, and then you can share it, right? You just share it
Absolutely.
With people who, you know, the appropriate elected leaders, et cetera. You can share that. You can ask them if they've seen it, what they think about it. You can figure out if your own ballots line up with what's recommended, and if not, why not? So there's one way. The book is Design for Democracy, Ballot and Election Design, and it came out when? 2007?
2007.
Does it feel like ancient history to you now?
It does.
You feel a little removed from it? But it doesn't feel ancient enough, Marcia, because we're still mm-hmm. struggling with this stuff. You said at the time this book, which is beautiful, by the way, no surprise, was sent to members of Congress. And what kind of feedback did you get?
I don't know that we got feedback, but it would have gone to AIGA. It was co-published by University of Chicago Press and AIGA, and the feedback would have probably gone to AIGA directly.
Okay.
It's got a lot of detail, including the production of absentee balloting and vote by mail. So it covers a lot of things, and it's all still very current.
I'm glad you brought that up because I had an email about that. Someone just saying that they typically vote absentee and wondering if standards should change with that.
So we had a wonderful experience with the state of Oregon where voters can vote by mail. And so it's a little bit like serious absentee balloting because you have to receive everything in the mail. And it was John Lindbeck, the state election director of Oregon, that was such a good link between the design world and the election world that we did that work with. So we have definitely produced examples of ballots that work for absentee voting. And they are, again, available.
The League of Women Voters is very much interested in expanding access to voting. And whenever we talk to our local leaders in the League of Women Voters, they talk about opening up things like early voting and things like that. Would that impact your work or the design work at all? Would that complicate it?
No, I think the more flexible for the voter, the better, and the design can be made to be flexible too.
If you ever want to see just how smart graphic designers are, by the way, just pick up a book by a graphic designer. I mean, everything in it is so easy to follow. It's clean. It's beautiful. Did you do this, by the way? Is this all your design handiwork?
Yeah. Not me alone. There's a whole list of people in the back, but yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So for example, I move right to voter registration. And we've been focusing on ballot for good reason. But when it comes to voter registration, simple access, questions on simplicity, et cetera, how are we doing with that?
There is a national voter registration form. That is one thing that's been made as a universal template that I believe you can just find by Googling, you know, registration form. And our proposed design for that form is in this book, and it probably aligns fairly closely, is my guess, because the people who were working toward making that a universal template were the people working with us. So John Lindbeck, who used to be in Oregon, is now with Pew Center for the States, or that was his most recent work in elections. And from there, he was carrying on with these with his advocacy.
Well, that's fascinating, because since the book comes out in 2007, you know, we wonder, well, how much on the ballot side has been followed? We don't have an exact number. Some, not nearly enough. On the voter registration, sounds like much more closely aligned to what you want to see.
Yes.
Okay. What are some of the other issues that the book addresses that, you know, sort of have or have not been addressed in recent years?
I think the whole behind-the-scenes business, not only do we talk about training poll workers and providing clear information, also information for voters, also the whole administrative system. There's a whole set of forms and envelopes that are used to manage behind the scenes, and we tackled all of that in Cook County, Illinois, which is a very complex jurisdiction, and so that information is also all available. We were able to then take that all that knowledge about how to produce elections when provisional voting came out as a rule and adapt it for provisional voting tools, and so we were even able to test the expansion of our system to added complexities in administration.
Okay. A couple of more listener comments here. Matt writes to us and says, late to today's show, but grateful design professionals are working on ballot design. Information design is smart design.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I imagine Marcia's going to co-sign on that comment. And another listener writes, I thought we were all digital, though my 83-year-old mother will tell you, polls are full of busybodies who want to see your ballot. She said, that's what my mom always said. I don't know if that's... I haven't had that experience. In fact, I will say, and Marcia has been repeatedly praising poll workers for good reasons, I really have been impressed and grateful for the work that they do going forward. But they have a lot of work to do. So giving them clean and easy information is part of this, right?
Absolutely. And things change, and sometimes the people who work and do the volunteer or get paid very little to do this work in the polls, sometimes they don't change. And so there's all kinds of politics there, too. But I think what we should all keep in mind is that it's pretty amazing that this is one day, this massive event, and there are a lot of people who work very hard and trying to do their best to make it right. And all we can do as designers is provide them with tools that make their job easier and try to make information clear to the voters.
All right. Dave is taking it all the way down to signage. He says, Evan, the process in Monroe County might work better if each polling place had a prominent sign outlining these steps. Go to the table for your district, sign the poll book, receive your ballot and privacy shield, go to a booth to mark your ballot with the pen provided, fill in the circle by each choice, take your marked ballot to a scanner, feed your ballot without privacy shield into the scanner, and watch the scanner screen for ballot successfully cast. Thank you for voting. Dave says that's the kind of clear signage that should be up. And I'm trying to remember if it is or isn't. I mean, you want to talk a little bit about
it? It will depend on where you're voting and how hard they've worked to make that clear. We have examples of that very kind of poster in our work, in the book. And I have a funny story about that. In Chicago, we would receive in the mail a process that was a four-step voting process. We would get to the voting booth, and that process suddenly was 10 steps. And it was the very same process. So the need to align the information behind the scenes is really important, and this is one of the places where we sort of discovered that it was the printers doing the design or the election officials doing the design, and somebody was making the poster for the polling place and a different person was making the one to mail. And so, you know, it's really a system, a design system that needs to be shared and followed.
Listeners, you're very engaged in this subject. And if you want to learn more and hear more from Marcia Lawson, 4:45 this afternoon, free public talk at the University Gallery at RIT. So if you're driving along and, you know, you're listening to the program, you've got a friend who may have an interest or concern in this issue, grab them. You can bring them along to that free public presentation. I'm down to about my last minute, so let me just ask you. If I would have gone back to 2000, shortly after Florida, shortly after the butterfly ballot, you're getting involved, and I would have told you 16 years later, we'd be sitting here, we'd be talking about it, and this is the progress we'd see, but this is the progress we would not see. You would have been disappointed, or you would have said, that's what I expect.
I have to say I'm pretty proud of all this work and all the people doing it, and that we have made significant improvements in U.S. elections.
But would you have been more idealistic to think change would have been more widespread? Because it sounds like your answer is studded with understanding of the process and wisdom that comes with experience in dealing with bureaucracy.
Yeah, I guess I. It's such not an easy. I know what goes on, so it's hard to answer as if I were that person in 2000. But I don't think I would have expected. Our profession was not as known then. It was a chance for us to say, hey, we're here. We have succeeded on that level in an industry that didn't know we were there. I am a little bit of a, you know, very optimistic person. I think I'm proud of it.
I think you should be. And our listeners today are clearly, Matt's a perfect example. Just thanking you for the work that you and your colleagues have done on this, because it matters. It matters to voters. Nobody wants to see another Florida 2000, but that's the extreme example. Nobody wants to see confusion for voters ever. And the kind of work that Marcia and her colleagues are doing have been really helping with that. So you've got a little more information, voters, if you want to take it to your elected leaders and see what they're doing or not about it. But thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having
me. Really enjoyed the conversation. You can see it at RIT today, 4:45 at University Gallery. Short break, more Connections next.